So please join me in welcoming Greg Bem, who is a poet and librarian and creator of Carbonation Press, to the stage to give our the launch event.
Good evening.
Hello. I just arrived from Spokane last night. Feels good to be back in this place, especially in this season, and especially without a deluge of rain. the flowers have been really lovely to greet me, and as have the crows, and all of you tonight. Thank you for being out here on a Thursday evening. Thank you to Elliot Bay. Thanks, Elijah, for the introduction and for helping host and keeping all of this going tonight. And I just wanted to have some intro remarks about the book and the press, just to set some context before I introduce one of the lead editors of the book today. So I moved to Spokane in fall of 2023 from here in Seattle. I moved for a variety of reasons that I'm not going to go into right now, but in leaving a place that I lived for 13 years for a completely new place, my immediate thinking was centering this idea of community and what does community mean. It had been an ongoing topic for me personally for pretty much my entire writing life in Seattle, so about 12 and a half years. The idea of community was very challenging when I lived here in the city of this size and of this texture. It changed in a lot of ways. And when I left, it changed again. One of the things that I encountered in Spokane was that it was much easier to meet and stay connected to individuals. One thing I also encountered in Spokane was that it was still very difficult to stay connected to writers and artists for all of the emotional reasons that come with creating art and in community and in isolation. So I immediately started thinking about my relationship to the structures that help build community in a variety of ways in my life. And with the context of writing also being centered, I started thinking about creating a small press. And that's where Carbonation Press really arrived, was that leaving Seattle for Spokane. Living in Spokane has also been living on a very transient water body, the Spokane River. I live not very far from that river. It is essentially the heart of that river valley and the space that many, many different types of people, including indigenous and colonial, have called home for generations. And it has been a spiritual homeland since time immemorial to what we now refer to as the four bands of the Spokane people, the upper, the middle, the lower bands, as well as the Chewila band. And so having that understanding of this space of transience, I've been continuing, even to this day, thinking about what is my life moving in transit, moving between places, and how do I center myself? And Carbonation has been one of the structures for me in thinking about that, as well as thinking about my relationship to other writers and artists. So in 2023, that's when the press really kicked off and we started working together, we meaning the writers and myself, in publishing their works. Several folks who've been published by Carbonation are here tonight. I'm excited to say that as of this month, Carbonation will have released 12 individual author texts. Thank you. And as well as this amazing anthology, and there is another anthology that should be arriving next month, which is in partnership with the Community School of Spokane, which is an experimental alternative high school in Spokane, Washington, as well as a long list of other projects I'm working on with other authors, and I'm really excited about each and every one of them. They're all individual conversations, and I think that one of the epiphanies that I have arrived through is the epiphany of the conversation by way of the anthology. I will hold off on some of my social commentary, but I do believe that this text has really made me confront the neutrality of the publishing industry, the neutrality of and new transactional nature of relationship making in the context of creating objects that are bound to the commodification within our society here in the US and globally. You know, the book as something that is bought and sold is a really powerful thing for me to think about. And I try my damnedest to think about ways to break that way of thinking when making the books with the authors that I work with in the collaborative model that I apply to the bookmaking. And we use a print-on-demand service called Lulu for making the books because we want things to be more ephemeral. We want things to be print-on-demand and slightly environmentally conscious where we can, and one that is really responding to the interests of the authors and the capacity of the authors and myself through that process. I'm grateful to the editors. I'm grateful to Paul E. Nelson. I'm grateful to Katie Sarah Zale. I'm grateful to the entire editorial board of this project. It was an immense and very fast thing to do. I still think about it, reflect on the timeline of this book very regularly because it seemed like it happened overnight, and yet the labor that went into making it from the poets and the contributors to the editors to even myself laboring away at the interior layout and our fabulous cover designer and artist, the cover artist, like all of that work and that ecosystem was all conversation, and events like tonight's really help parse out what that conversation ends up looking like, which is fascinating to me. And I will just honor the, in closing, I'll honor the land that we're on today. I'm greatly in appreciation of the Duwamish, the Muckleshoot, the Coast Salish, the stewardship of the land. I also want to call out the land itself, our own relationship to it in this incredibly fascinating, exploitative, beautiful place that we live in here in Seattle, here in Western Washington, here in Washington State. The book was designed also, again, on the land of the Spokane people, as well as the transient lands of so many other tribes that live in the region of the Inland Northwest. And I consider it my responsibility to honor that stewardship and also participate in ongoing stewardship with the Spokane and the Spokane River and the land that surrounds that river. Without further ado, I'm going to pass the mic to one of the lead co-editors tonight, my first friend in Seattle 15 years ago, I always love to say that, and a true writing mentor and advisor and brother, Paul E. Nelson. Everyone.
He's a force of nature. I don't know how he does all that he does and travels all the time, all over the world. And what he's creating with Carbonation Press is a community of writers. And I'm very honored to be part of the community of writers that he's creating. And he's just getting started, I think. I'm very grateful to be here, to be part of this book. Katie Sarah Zale is working on a biography of Sam Campbell, the founder of Copper Canyon Press. And she called me the day after the election and she said, you know, I was thinking about this and I was thinking, what would Sam do? And Sam would create an anthology, that was obvious. And I said, let's have it out by Inauguration Day. And she said, okay. Then we realized what that takes. Have you ever had a day where you've been sick and had 4 2-hour Zoom meetings where you get up after a Zoom meeting and go on the couch and you just blow your nose for a half an hour and then nap for 20 minutes and then the spouse tells you it's time for your next Zoom call? That's the way we did it. We got sick doing this book. But that is nothing compared to some of the sacrifices American citizens, and regardless of whether they're citizens or not, the fact that due process does not appear to exist in this country anymore. The constitutional guarantees that we grew up with, that we studied in civics in first and second grade, are going out the window, or so it appears. So let us make sure that we are noting all of this. In all the poetry workshops we do, I'm teaching things like repertorial poetics and investigative poetry. marking exactly what's happening, remembering the names of people who are making sacrifices for us. This is really, really critical. I think of Elliot Weinberger's book, What I Heard During the Iraq War, which is a very critical book and a great example of what we can do. So I said, Katie, let's do it, and let's invite some co-editors. And so we invited six other co-editors. We do not recommend this, that you try this at home. Eight poets with eight different kinds of poetics and very strong opinions about what is and what isn't deserving to be in the book was very difficult, and I'm never going to do that again. From the preface, which mostly was written by Katie, I just checked a couple of things. I read a couple of paragraphs. As the map of the U.S. filled with red on November 5, 2024, countless people worldwide felt grief or helplessness, depression, fear. They may not have aptly labeled their feelings, for true emotions typically transform into anger before we have time to name them. It is the task of the poet to call things by their proper names. Confucius calls for a rectification of names, believing that clear and precise use of language leads to social harmony. That's something she got from Sam. Mm-hmm. For this anthology, we asked poets and artists to respond to their feelings about the election to reflect deeper than conscious anger, keeping in mind the words of Sam Hamill in his introduction to Poets Against the War, which he published in response to the war in Iraq in 2003. Sam said, "These are the voices of our poets. They come from every segment of society. They also celebrate our country by expounding a compassionate view of the universe. A government is a government of words, and when those words are used to mislead, to instill fear, or to invite silence, it is the duty of every poet to speak fearlessly and clearly." And I think that is part of what we have done in this book. We also have one philosopher in this book, and bless him, he likes to hang with the poets, and he, along with Greg Bem, are some of the most eloquent human beings I've ever had the good fortune to be around. He is the chair of philosophy at Seattle U. He's the co-editor of Cascadian Zen, volumes 1 and 2, created by Watershed Press. He's a Soto Zen priest. Ted Susan, Jason Wirth.
Thank you all for being here. I have the afterword for the text, and as I was spending some time both trying to handle my grief, but also support my colleagues, but also thinking about my own practice, first of all, as I was thinking about it, I knew it was going to be bad. I think we all knew it was going to be bad. I have to say, this is much worse than I ever could have imagined. This is horrible, and we're living in a time of immense and incomprehensible sorrow. The list would just be the entire evening, and we would just be starting. So it made my own little thoughts even more urgent, gave them more exigency. I decided to think about Zen Master Dogen from the 13th century, who gives me a lot of inspiration. And Dogen, when he was working, it was at a time where Zen was very new to the world, and to the Japanese world at least. And there was a teaching in Buddhism at the time. And it's one that intuitively we could all somehow sense must be true. The teaching was called the Mappo. The Mappo theory was the Buddha spoke, he was so clear, he was so eloquent, and everyone was like, yeah, yeah, I agree. Then a few centuries go by, and like, oh, I don't know what he meant. You know, maybe this, maybe that. And then after a millennium or so, we're in the Mappo. We just have no idea what he was talking about. We have no idea. It's just horrible. It's just terrible. But yeah, in a way, intuitively, I want to say Mappo in America yet again. But you know, that's actually not a good teaching. We can't give in to that. That's my idea. It's always Mappo. It's always hard. And the poet, like the Buddhist, is called, I think, to be, in their own way, a bodhisattva. And In my little reflection, I begin with this little tiny piece of a poem by Albert Saijo about the Bodhisattva vows. Bodhisattva vows to be the last one off the sinking ship. You sign up and find out it's forever. Passenger list endless. Ship never empties. Ship keeps sinking, but doesn't go quite under. And that's a Dogen thought. Dogen said, there is no Mapo. Or maybe better, there's always the Mapo. You can put it however you want to. Dogen responded that such a sentiment was rooted in a fundamental misunderstanding of practice. Given that the Dharma gates are boundless, practice is not a matter of accomplishment. The passenger list is endless. The ship is always sinking. Furthermore, practice is not a matter of achieving some future state in which we can perform superhuman feats. Even though we try as hard as we can, we cannot supersede our limitations or those of our time. Dogen recounts, and I quote, that sages of the past did not necessarily have golden bones. I love that. It's hard.
It slows down.
You know, if you look at the history of the practitioners with golden bones, it'd be like five people.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it's just hard. And we have our limitations, and it seems to get worse all the time, but that is practice. That is why we're poets. That is why we go to the Zafu. That is why we work hard. That is why we sleep poorly at night. That's why we cultivate our friendships. Welcome to the Mapo. Always the Mapo. So, thank you very much.
Okay, I think the final tally is 9 poets. We'll soon find out. We're gonna go by alphabetical order of last name. So you see people, be ready. Okay. The first of which is Terry Campbell. This is their bio. Is a widely unknown and unpublished Zen anarchist, eco-feminist, queer haiku poet living in Cascadia. However, published in Winter in America again. Please welcome Terry Campbell.
In a couple of other anthologies, one of them is called Glimmering Hour, the other one is called No Longer Strangers, and some zines, hyper zines called Kingfisher, Famku, and
Cascadian Zen.
And Frog Pond. And, well, Cascadian Zen, needless to say, fabulous anthology. So I'm saying that because I guess as a writer, I'm supposed to have some kind of a bio, and I'm just learning to do that. And Paul just kind of looks at me and goes, that's it? As we mentioned, haiku is my primary form, and I am incredibly grateful to be a part of this timely anthology, and also to be here on May Day, when we honor immigrants' rights. And I want to take a moment to quote Rebecca Solnit. And she says, the great German artist, Joseph Beuys, used to recite as a maxim and a manifesto the phrase, everyone is an artist. I used to think that he meant that everyone should make art. But now I wonder if he wasn't speaking to a more basic possibility, that everyone could become a participant rather than a member of an audience, that everyone could be a creator instead of a consumer of meaning. Or, as Lewis Carroll said, imagination is the only weapon in the war against reality. And we find ourselves in a very strange reality at this point. And I wanted to honor all the imaginative people who are currently existing in this city, in this state, in this country, throughout the world, the judges, the lawyers, the educators, all the people working for immigrants' rights, trans rights, unions, pro-Palestinian, anti-abortion, the forest defenders, and last but not least, the writers in this anthology who have chosen imagination over silent complicity.
Mm-hmm.
These are my four haiku from Winter in America Again. And they go by fast. I might read them twice. Imagine Inauguration Day, the flag at half mast. Election post-mortem, one nation, so many countries. Electoral college, the long shadow of slavery.
Yeah.
Unable to vote, the forest's deep silence. And since the election, I have been writing every day what I call a haiku headline, and I wanted to send four of those to you. McKinley, the mountain's dead name. Peace talks on a monopoly board. Taking down Tesla, cherry blossoms. Glam Barbie does space in 10 minutes. Blue Origin. Last but not least, his namesake, Francis, brother, son, sister, moon. Thank you.
Thanks, Taryn. Winter in America Again, the title, because of a guy named Gil Scott Heron, who had a tune called Winter in America in 1974. There'll be some allusions to that tonight. I remember hearing Gil for the first time on WXRT in Chicago. I was in the car going to school, and I heard this tune come on, Big Movie. And I was like, I arrived at the college, the tune was still on, I turned off the engine, just listened to the rest of it, had a chance to see him a couple of times. Incredibly captivating. And I think channeling the spirit of Gil is something that we wanted to do for this book. And of course, that is again, we're gonna put out another book that's called Winter America Still. We're planning on doing that. The open parentheses is taking a trick out of Charles Olson's book. So, rather than having a sidebar and being done with it, the whole thing is kind of a sidebar, right? There's a thing in the Maximus poems, there's a section that he says, you go all around this subject. I didn't know there was a subject. Right? Subject is creative resistance. Keep that in mind, creative resistance, right? How can we begin to do that? How can we begin to get to the core of things by using the most creative tools in our arsenal? I hope you get some sense of that tonight. Our next poet is Catalina Marie Cantú, an indigenous Mexican and Medellin multi-genre writer and Vona alum. Her poetry and prose has appeared in Poetry on the Buses, Seattle Poetic Grid, The Inspired Poet, many other places. Please welcome Catalina Cantú.
Can everybody see me? This is the short person representative up here. Let's see. Well, I want to thank Elliot Bay, all of you, dear audience, for coming out tonight. All the editors, especially the ones that know me and still took the leap to pick this poem. Do I worry? Because I come from a long line of worriers. My immigrant ancestors knit, crocheted, and sewed their worries into garments I wore from the time I was born. That weight to keep food on the table, a roof overhead, doing back-breaking labor on the railroads, in the fields, and factories. No hope for a future without sweat and dirt and grease. The church preached eternal salvation in another life. I am sleepless, the what ifs, when to do's, how can I's, why do I feel so powerless? I'm an educated doer, a fixer, a problem solver for everyone else. Until one day I began to meditate. It saved me from the worry. But if I stopped meditating, the worry crept onto me, wrapped me like a burrito, swallowed me until I could not sleep. I start from either my head down or my feet up. I begin to relax. The worry slides off me like butter on a fresh corn cob. My eyes become heavy. Sleep swaddles me like a newborn.
Thanks, Catalina. I'm glad you're part of this.
Yeah.
It's been fun doing different readings for the book, a lot of Zoom readings. This thing's still on?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Did we turn it off or did it get fried? Or?
I don't think it's been on for a while.
You don't think so?
No.
All right. Is that? No, I don't think it is. I just projected. Well, but when Elijah comes back, he'll. There he comes storming back. Berries! Yeah! There we go. So I'll kill time.
It worked for just
because I was reading that for 26 years and I still had many dreams.
Must have been so, a letter.
Can I say something?
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things I wanted to say is that there are at least three editors, co-editors in the room. There's at least four board members of the Cascadia Poetics Lab, the organization that I founded over 31 years ago. We are going to take your time. I can think to you. We're going to be doing workshops. Some of the co-editors are going to be doing workshops on how do we navigate this moment as writers. Thank you. Thank you. He's getting his aerobic exercise in with that move there. How can we refrain from rhetoric and invective and come to a deeper place with this work? I think that's going to be the core of what the workshops are going to attempt to address. I'm delighted to bring up our next poet, Zachary Brett Charles. He, a middle school Spanish teacher, poet, and multimedia artist, they worry constantly about the effects of the current economic and physical infrastructure of the overdeveloped nations on all the individuals of our world, from algae to ant to orca to elephant. They've been inspired by organic poetry in the vein of Charles Olson, Denise Levertov, and also by the Miyawaki method of forest planting developed by Dr. Akira Miyawaki. He's my Spanish teacher. He's a beautiful human being. He's my brother, and I'm delighted to present Zach Charles.
Yeah.